On the evening of Tuesday, October 23, 2018, the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the League of Women Voters, and the Belgrade and Bozeman Public Libraries sponsored a candidate forum held at the Belgrade Public Library. The forum featured candidates for three Montana House districts: District 64 with Denise Albrecht and Carrie White, District 67 with Christine Minicucci and Tom Burnett, and District 68 with Seth Mangini and Bruce Grubbs. Representative White was unable to attend. The candidates each gave introductory remarks, answered a prepared question, then answered questions from the audience before they wrapped up the evening with closing remarks.
My name is Sally Mason. I belong to the League of Women Voters, and the League and the Bozeman and Belgrade Library and the Bozeman Business and Professional Women are the ones who are putting on these forums. And this is the third of four forums. There's one more tomorrow night. And I am a moderator. And I want to thank the candidates for coming and all of you for coming out in this hyper-partisan world. I would never run for office, so I'm very appreciative of people who do. So the format is going to be each candidate will introduce him or herself and have 2 minutes to do that. And then we'll have, they'll answer a question that we have posed to them that they prepared, and they'll have 2 minutes for that. And then we'll have a couple of rapid fire questions just to make everybody laugh. And then we'll take questions from you. And when we take questions from you, they need to be questions. And I'm not nice about this, so if you start to give a speech, I'm gonna stop you. A couple of other things. I want to introduce Gail Bacon, who's the director of the Belgrade Community Library. Thanks so much for hosting him.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you for coming, everybody.
So what I'm going to do is pass the mic around, and let's begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all for coming out. My name is Denise Albrecht, and I'm running for House District 64. Which is Four Corners, Gateway, all the way up to Big Sky, and then to West Yellowstone. It's 87 miles. And I grew up in Great Falls. I was born and raised there. My family's still there. I've spent my first 15 years in the healthcare human services field. I went to the University of Utah on a tennis scholarship. Then I went to graduate school at Catholic University in Washington, D.C. And I worked in social services at different mental health clinics, and then moved back to Great Falls and worked at the Benefice Hospital on the psychiatric unit. And then moved down to Bozeman and worked in the school districts with at-risk families. And then I got a call from Montana State University and said, listen, we're looking for a head women's tennis coach at Montana State. And I said, well, why not? And so I thought I would do that for about 5 years. I ended up doing that for 15. And so I recently retired a couple of years ago and decided to get off the sidelines, so to speak, and jump into politics. And I couldn't sleep at night, and I just thought, what can I do to try to get from point A to point B and move things forward? So I jumped into the race, and it's been awesome. So thank you for being here.
The other person who's running for District 64 is unable to be here. That's Carrie White. I want to make sure we mention his name.
I'm Christine Minicucci. I've lived in Belgrade for over 28 years. I've been a teacher in the school system, intermediate school, for over 20. I taught sixth grade, so feel free, any comments. Doesn't bother me one bit. Especially, does this match? I don't care. I retired from teaching after my husband passed away, and I knew I wanted to get involved in this community. I knew I wanted to stay in this community. I was by myself at that time. And so I was appointed and then elected to the city council. Been on the city council for 5 years. I was a library board trustee. I'm on the library foundation. I'm also on the Gallatin Water Quality Board, the Planning Coordinating Committee between Bozeman and Belgrade, on the Revolving Loan Fund Board. a lot of other things in Belgrade, but I am committed to this community. I am helping it grow, and from my husband to me 23 years later, no, now it's 29 years later, we've seen dirt roads turn to streets, highways, and when we were in the Netherlands on Quaz Boulevard, and now we're just approving a subdivision of 1,500 new homes, and we need the infrastructure and we need partnerships to help us with this growth and to sustain the growth. So I'm here representing Belgrade.
I'm Tom Burnett. I was born in Sheridan, Montana, and when I was one, my parents moved to go to college here. I'm one of nine children. They have a place up in Bear Canyon. They're still there. I've lived in Baker, Whitewater, Arlee, Billings, Belgrade three times, Bozeman, Deer Lodge, outside the walls. I graduated from high school in Bozeman, went to college in Bozeman, graduated. My wife and I have four children and nine grandchildren. I'm in my third term in the state legislature. I serve on appropriations and try to keep spending in check.
Well, thank you for having us here tonight. It's been my privilege for the last 2 years to represent House District 68, which encompasses part of Belgrade, a lot of rural area, crosses two school districts, Bozeman and Belgrade, and the Central Valley Fire Department patrols most of my district. So it's a great district, and it, you know, really encompasses parts of two communities. I've been a 36-year resident of the Gallatin Valley. I first came here as manager of the Sears store, so anyone that's been around for a while was downtown where Schmaes was, and now it's a brewery. So I managed that store in the 80s, but since I've been here, I decided, you know, this was where I wanted to stay. I've had multiple small businesses in retail, insurance, manufacturing, and most recently, I retired the end of June as CEO of a nonprofit, Southwest Montana School Services, which provided low-cost services to schools in Southwest Montana and actually all over the state of Montana. I started my public service when I came to Bozeman, served on many boards, but in 2001 I was elected to the Bozeman School Board, and I was elected five times and served as board chair and vice chair. But my one term of experience means that I have experience going back for a second term, and I think I can be much more effective. So I've worked with Belgrade on the liquor bill, got the quota areas divided, and worked on the infrastructure bills to get more tax dollars for building roads and sewers. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming. My name is Seth Mangini. I'm also running for House District 68. My day job, I work for the Forest Service as a trail crew foreman. So I spend a lot of time chopping, sawing logs, commanding volunteers, digging tread. Not a lot of time necessarily speaking in front of large groups. Listening to my voice in a microphone is a little weird. Trying to get used to it. You'll excuse me. I'm running for the state legislature because I see the issues that working families and working people struggle with: housing, healthcare, cost of everything continually going up, and wages not necessarily keeping pace. And I struggle with these issues myself, and I think we need somebody in Helena that understands and can commiserate. I'm also running because, as many Montanans do, our public lands are very important to me, both as a Forest Service person and just as a lover of the land. And I want to make sure that they stay public and stay accessible and are managed for the greatest good. A little about me: I came here, like many people do, to go to Montana State. I earned a master's degree in geology and then decided that this is where I want to live. And so here I am. I was raised a Boy Scout, taught to be involved in your community, and I'm going to continue to do that. So thank you.
We asked each of the candidates to spend 2 minutes answering the following question. What is your plan for addressing the lack of mental health services in Montana? So they've had time to prepare that question. Who wants to go first?
Start there. It's only
fair. Start there. Is that only fair? Is that fair? We need to be fair. Are you up to fair?
I guess that is. All right.
All right. Seth, I think you're ready.
This is good. I thought we just had a minute and a half, so I can talk more slowly than I planned to. Montana is a challenging environment for mental health services, and we need a system that rises to that challenge. We have a high proportion of at-risk groups, including veterans, Native Americans, and college students. We also are hampered by our long travel distances to treatment facilities and an overloaded case management system. A better system will have three components: inpatient care, outpatient care, and integration with substance abuse treatment. Inpatient. Best available practices recommend that we should have 50 inpatient beds per 100,000 people. The state of Montana, by that metric, should have 500 beds. We only have 137 currently, and that's actually down 20 beds from 2010. So we need to build inpatient facilities, and we need to build them in our major population centers, and we also need to build smaller facilities in the outlying areas of the state. Inpatient. This is a critical component of the system. We should have a facility in at least every county. Currently, we do not, and we actually closed three facilities due to budget cuts in the last session, including Livingston, Libby, and Dillon. So now those people might have to travel 2, 3, 4 hours for treatment. And when you're dealing with a mental health crisis, that's not really a viable option for a lot of people. So we need them in every county, and we need the ability also to have providers that can provide house calls in the rural areas of the state. And then, as I said, mental illness and drug abuse often go hand in hand, and therefore we need to make sure that our facilities that deal with mental health are also adequately equipped to deal with substance abuse treatment.
So the first thing I would do, and depending on what happens with I-185, if it goes to the legislature, I would support removing the sunset, because those Medicaid dollars are crucial in providing mental health services to especially our population of lower income. And I have some familiarity, working with schools for many years. Schools provide mental health services in the schools, and it's CSCT services, which stands for Comprehensive School and Community Treatment. We've had a problem in schools, and schools have come to me. There's a couple of local school districts that have come to me because they can't find providers to work with the students. And if you're going to screen and prevent mental health, you know, it starts at a young age to start working with those students. And so putting more money into providers would be a big thing that I would push for. We do, and I think Representative Burnett had a list coming out, but I think the statistics I had said we spend per capita, we're the seventh state in the nation, so we have money. I just think we need to direct it to the right places. Also, training primary care providers, your doctors that see patients on their wellness visits to screen patients, train them to screen patients for mental health, and so they can refer them to the right people who can treat them. So prevention and screening are two areas that I would really support. Thank you.
Sally, can you repeat the question?
Would I repeat the question?
Sure.
Thank you.
What is your plan for addressing the lack of mental health services in Montana?
We begin with a joke that's not terribly pertinent. I started a 30-day diet. So far, I've lost 15 days. The question of the forum is, what is your plan for addressing the lack of mental health services in Montana? I assume this is meant to read, what is your plan for addressing the lack of taxpayer-provided mental health services in Montana? Define lack of, compared to what? I cite four examples of taxpayer efforts in mental health that may be as much as they can bear. Only nine states, refer to the little handout here, spend more in the 1, 2, 3, the fourth column, spend more than Montana on per person basis on mental health. Where's the lack? Mental health got a recent infusion, $715 million a year in new Medicaid expansion taxpayer funds. Where's the lack? How much more? Three, taxpayers have been building mental health campuses like Bozeman's Hope House in 5, maybe 6 cities to move care from institutional to neighborhood and city settings. Does that count? Medicaid providers make more in Montana than in 48 other states. That is, their reimbursement rates, what they're paid, is higher than in all other states but one. Additional funds for mental health could come from other areas of present spending, say the school facilities fund, K-12 education, higher education, nursing homes, disability services, public employee and pension contributions. Any support for that? How much taxpayer spending on mental health would be enough?
In my first year of teaching in Belgrade, I had a student go in the bathroom and cut his wrists. He came from a very dysfunctional family. He went on to petty crimes. He killed himself in prison. There's not enough money in the world to stop this. We can look at the budget. We can look at the tax cuts in 2003. And we can, again, take that tax bracket and raise it. So anyone over $500,000, their bracket goes up again. As it stands, someone who makes $500,000 is paying the same rate as a waitress. So 25% or 40% of 500,000 or 25% of 17,000, that's a heck of a lot of different buying power. We have not addressed, as Bruce has said, we have not addressed prevention. It costs so much money because we're having people go to jail, go to hospitals, to emergency rooms. And I've seen it with our police bringing to the hospital and they're treated for mental health. If they can't have family, if they don't have a place to go, they take them to Warm Springs. It costs a lot of money. Prevention is what we need, and it needs to start, believe it or not, in the grade schools. And it starts with not only the kids, but their families. There is money to pay for it. We just have to own it.
Like I said, I've worked in the mental health business and for 15 years, and I agree with prevention. And what we have to understand, mental health and mental health issues, they last a lifetime. You know, they last forever. And when you put a family who's struggling financially, and then they have also issues with mental health, depression, their children are struggling, that's a really tough combination. You know, poverty and mental illness combined, and we have that. So there's a lot of programs currently that are going on in the school systems and with the suicide prevention programs. Those are a lot that are going on, but we don't know about them. I think somebody mentioned accessibility. I mean, we need to get out there and we need to learn about those programs, and it's not only our job in the state legislature, but it's also parents in schools. I worked as a parent liaison with the school districts for high-risk families. And so the teacher would come in and she would say, you know what, so-and-so has been in the same clothes for the last 4 days. We need to get into that family. We need to talk to them and get into their home and figure out how they can get from point A to point B. So we need to be more efficient, and we need to really be in the trenches with these families and with these individuals and find out where they are to help them get from point A to point B.
Okay, I'm not gonna pass the mic so you have to shout. What's the last book you read? Tom?
Travels with Charlie.
Oh, nice. Christine?
Don't Think of an Elephant.
Don't Think of an Elephant. Denise?
Tuesdays with Maury.
Tuesdays with Maury. Bruce?
Actually, I'm reading one now, and it's been taking me so long because I've been so busy. Can't remember the name. It's a spy novel.
Okay. Steph?
The short story At the End of a River Runs Through It, called USFS 1919. Near my heart.
All right. Dogs or cats, Seth?
Dogs. I'm allergic to cats.
Bruce?
Dogs.
Dogs or cats?
Both.
Christine?
Dogs.
Dogs. Denise?
Horses.
That is not one of the options. Okay. And I'm going to start with Tom. What's your favorite vacation destination?
Flathead Lake.
Flathead Lake. Bruce?
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Christine?
Racetrack campground up in the in Powell County.
In Powell County? Racetrack campground? Seth?
Cimarron, New Mexico.
Cimarron, New Mexico. Denise?
Wimbledon.
Wimbledon. Did you go to Wimbledon?
My 40th birthday!
Oh, how wonderful. I want to go to Wimbledon. Okay, so now we're going to have questions from you. And again, I want to remind you, it needs to be a question. Yes.
Okay.
And you
take the microphone.
You know what? Sure. Since you're close, if you're not close, you have to shout. Okay. And then each you can direct it to anybody you want, or everybody. And everybody can answer.
I'm making this question kind of short, but a warming climate poses threats to our agriculture and outdoor industry that are so important to our area. And I'm wondering if you can say specifically to the ranchers and the farmers and the business owners and their employees, who work in the alpine ski industry, which is so important in Big Sky, dog sledding, snowmobiles, fly fishing, guys, you got it. It's all dependent on weather. So I'm wondering, since the climate assessment report said we could be facing 10 more degrees in the future, and then the world's climate scientists said that we don't have any more time. So my question is, what policies would you support to move us quickly to a low carbon economy?
Okay. What policy would you use to move to a low carbon economy? Who wants to start?
Could you repeat the question? You said it's
over. Who? The very tail end of it.
The very tail end is that there's an increased urgency because...
No, it's the question.
The tail end. Question is, what policies would you support to move us quickly to a low carbon economy, which is necessary for our local economy?
Thank you. Who wants to be the first person to answer that question?
I'll take a sideward stab at it. We could mandate vegetarianism, but I wouldn't do that.
That's it?
That's
it. Okay.
I think the economics. Economics is a great motivator. I think that I grew up in Butte, so climate change was, I call it global warming actually. Climate change is rather benign. So I think incentivizing or even punitive, there's no better word for it, for carbon emissions, where I know we're going backwards on that. And that's not, especially when the eastern part of the world is now reining carbon emissions in, we shouldn't be allowing more. I think when you're motivated by economics, we find a way. Making money is a great motivator. And it's either shut down or let's find a way.
I think we've come a long way, and I think we're educated more and we understand what's happening in the world around us and in the state of Montana. And I think when we were all younger, things were different, and we have to be more mindful, and we have to protect what we have and the environment, and we need to educate ourselves, and we really need to just take that on ourselves. I think.
Well, climate change is happening. And I think, as Christine said, economic motivators are usually what works. And I don't know if anyone read this in the last couple of weeks on the internet, but ExxonMobil has come out and supported carbon tax. So even the oil companies are getting on board. They see what's happening and that we have to make a change. As a legislator in Montana, we only have limited impact on things, but I would support, and I would look at the economics of it, I would support measures that would move us, with incentives to limit carbon emissions, but not disrupt employment in the state as well.
Yes, this is an issue near and dear to my heart as a geologist and as a person who worked for the Department of Energy developing carbon and capture and sequestration technology for the Department of Energy when I was in grad school. I cannot stress the urgency that comes from this latest study. If anybody knows what 10 degrees of warming would mean, we actually won't have anything to work with or to worry about because it would likely destroy our society and most of life on Earth. The first policy we need to take to tackle this is money in our elections. We've been talking about this for 30 years, and nothing has happened and nothing has been passed, even though people of both parties agree that it needs to happen. And so that's going to be, I think, mandatory in order to affect change. I do support, as far as actual policy, a carbon tax, and I support the carbon neutral version of it, in which any revenues collected are then divided up and distributed equally to each member of the population. And I also support, and this might have to take more of a creative approach, we need carbon negative technologies. And the best way to do that would be to take aging power stations like Colstrip and retrofit them to burn biomass, capture the carbon that comes out, and then store that away. And that way we're actually pulling CO2 out of the atmosphere.
Another question. Yes.
I can talk loud.
Okay.
What about supporting PACE, Property Assist Clean Energy? It was something that they tried to get in the last legislature.
PACE,
Property Assessed Clean Energy.
Okay.
It's a way for property owners to put solar on their homes and work with other banks that would basically loan them the money, and then you would be assessed on your property taxes over like 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
Is anybody in support of that?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't need the microphone.
Okay.
I don't. Of course I am. As a legislator, that's exactly what we're after. You know, it's you can make it global, you can make it statewide, but local is the way that you deal with these problems. You start here, and that makes it manageable. And so that's exactly what needs to happen. You know, we can't change the world in one fell swoop, but you start at home and then you move it out.
I would agree with Chris, and I know that there are certain companies that will also do that with your lawn. If you take your lawn out and you don't use so much water watering your lawn, and you put different landscape in there, that's also an incentive, and also doing anything like that to help with, the environment we live in.
I don't remember that bill. It might not have made it out of committee, but I don't think I would have supported it.
Do you want to say more about why?
Okay. I don't recall the bill either, but I'd be open to something like that. I'd want to know more of the details of how it would work. It would need to be revenue neutral as far as, you know, tax situation, but if it's a way to encourage people to use more energy, you know, cleaner energy, I would definitely be open to it.
I would definitely support a bill like that. I would also support something similar for home geothermal. People talk a lot about solar, but a way to get a whole lot more bang from your buck as far as carbon savings, energy savings, and utility bill savings is home geothermal. Like anything like this, there's a big upfront cost, and so if we could have some kind of low interest loan program where you could get that loan and install the technology and then have the savings be defrayed by the savings on your utility bills, I think that would be great ideas. I also support increasing the cap on solar array sizes. There was a few bills like this in the last session, and a couple net metering bills as well. And I think we need to move these forward and encourage this every step of the way.
If elected, what will your number one priority be when you take your seat?
Mine would be concentrating on health and human services. If I-185 doesn't pass, then for restoring cuts and renewing the HealthCare Act.
I would also say healthcare and then education.
Pension. We have a huge pension problem. And that predates pension, public pension problem in this state is much like other states. We're about kind of the middle of the pack as far as the worst to the best among the states. And my father's a retired teacher. So it's kind of neutral, both sides of the aisle. People of all political stripes should be worried about this issue. It's a commitment we've made long ago. And it has to be funded, and we can't have all the nice things that we would like if we do that job.
Can I answer that?
Sure. Pensions aren't gifts. Pensions aren't entitlements. We pay through our salary, and I was a retired teacher as well. We pay this pension so we'll have it when we retire. We take a smaller paycheck because you call them amenities, but they're delayed payment. And if we can't pay the pension system, there's mismanagement, and or else somebody's stealing it. Because it should be there, it's paid in. Actually, it is there.
Okay. I'm going to stop you both. Okay. The question was, what's your top priority?
Sort of a split top priority, but my top priority is supporting public education and more specifically infrastructure. A lot of school buildings in Montana are deteriorating. Bozeman isn't the norm where people pass bonds and build new high schools. Most of the state has schools that are falling apart, they're dangerous, they need to be improved. And also, just in general, infrastructure and growing communities like the Gallon Valley, how we fund those infrastructure projects and finding the right way to do that.
Well, I have a lot of priorities, but I'd have to say number one would be affordable housing in Montana and Gallatin County specifically. The cost has really driven up in the past 5 years, and it's hurting a lot of people, and it's taking their hard-earned money, and it's just siphoning it away, and they can't do the other things that they need to do in order to raise a family and to live a life.
Next question. Yes, ma'am.
If elected, what will you do to address affordable housing?
If elected, what will you do to address affordable housing?
Well, I think one step we can take right off the bat would be in Gallatin County to build a whole lot more student housing on campus. We've increased enrollment almost 4,000 in the past 5-6 years, and we haven't really added much in the way of student housing. So I think we could take a lot of pressure off of the housing market and the rental market by building apartment-style housing on campus. And then those students' rent would go into paying back the cost of construction. In the end, it would be revenue neutral to the state, probably even produce a little bit of a surplus. There's some other things that I think we can do too. We can encourage stressed communities to encourage them, the people to build mother-in-law houses and basement apartments and things like this to try and make better use of the developed space that we already have. And then I think that the state could develop a plan of low interest loans for cities or counties to create municipal housing authorities so that they can deal with the issue on the local level. And then those loans, of course, will be repaid in time. So revenue neutral, I think everybody would win, but I think we need to look and come up with creative solutions for this problem.
So I'm a local control guy, and I think it's local communities that need to be involved in this. But from the state level, I would look at how we can make it easier for local communities to work with their residents and, you know, either through ordinances or whatever, help make housing more affordable. And whether it's, you know, a local option sales tax, if they could use tourist dollars to help with that, you know, whatever it is, at the state level, you know, helping local committees work in their committee to figure out a plan that will work, because Bozeman is a lot different than Butte or somewhere else. So each community, it's not one size fits all. We know how we struggle with the growth, but Eastern Montana might have different issues, you know, especially when the oil boom was happening. They had the same problem, but different solutions maybe.
I don't have a grand scheme for this. The city commission in Bozeman has wrestled with it for 30 years. Perhaps the problem with affordable housing, which does spill over into this market too, is regulatory in nature. So there are probably some solutions there, freeing up, but there's no magic bullet by passing a law or a bill.
Well, I'm wearing two hats up here. I'm a city council member for the city of Belgrade. So my look is different. If you own the land, and people don't understand this, if you own the land and the developers meet all the criteria, the market absolutely tells you that there's a need, then the cities can't prevent them from building. What we can do here in this town and around this area is we can pay a livable wage so people can actually afford to live at $850 or $900 a month and not have, as I walk this area, you know, seven, eight, nine people in a two-bedroom apartment. You can work with agencies. Belgrade has worked with HRDC for affordable homes. We have, we bought old van camps and turned it into a little village, which is actually called Minicucci Square, because my husband was chairman of the board of HRDC for a long time. You can incentivize developers, and they are seeing now the market. So they are starting to build townhouses instead of condominiums, because townhouses are easier to finance and less down. And so that your payments go down a lot more. As Tom said, there's no magic bullet because there's lots of sides. You can legislate, but I'll guarantee a lot of it will be in the courts.
In House District 64, this is an issue that we have in West Yellowstone, also in Big Sky, also in Gallatin Gateway, and also in Four Corners. In West Yellowstone, they don't have enough housing, so a lot of their hotels have to go. They can't fill their hotels because they don't have enough workers who can live there. So it is a local issue, and I think, like Representative Grubbs was mentioning, a tax for a short amount of time to help take that burden off of people to, you know, build, give developers a little more incentive to do some low-income housing. I mean, we need to have that. You know, we need to build it in the city. Gateway had a big issue recently with building some different condos out there. You need to work with the city, county planning board. And people just need to be educated and mindful. Also, water is going to be an issue. Along with that, low-income housing and water and how much water we can have in sewer. So those are issues in 64 that we're dealing with along with housing. And so we all three of those agencies need to work together.
Thank you. Good questions, people. Yes, ma'am.
If I-185 doesn't pass and we have in the hands of the legislature Medicaid expansion for 100,000 Montanans, would you be willing to vote yes in favor of Medicaid expansion for with no sunset clause?
Okay, would you be willing to vote for Medicaid expansion with no sunset clause?
Absolutely.
I'm a no. I expect there are 30 to 40 no's in the state, in the House of Representatives. So I think I would be on the short side of that stick. But Medicaid expansion was supposed to be this big, the fiscal note and the number of enrollees, and it's this big. It's $715 million a year, all funds. And I have yet to see that the health benefit conferred is commensurate with the federal and state funds, remembering that the state's only paying about 10% when this thing is mature, but state taxpayers are paying federal taxes. We're paying a good share of those federal dollars too.
Yes, I would support Medicaid expansion or Healthy Montana Kids. 70% of the families that are on Healthy Montana Kids are working families, and some of them have two jobs. And Medicaid expansion or Healthy Montana Kids only kicks in when somebody needs it and when they are sick. And you know, 1 out of 10, 100,000 people are on that health insurance. Now, it might not be the best insurance, it might not be the best system, but it's all that we have at this moment. And so we have got to make sure that stays in place for families and children.
I would vote yes to take off the sunset. I would want to see some of the parts of the HELP Act, such as the employment training, maybe some asset testing or some sort of work requirements for certain Medicaid recipients to, you know, just keep it under control. But I would support it. A lot of rural hospitals, I think, would go out of business if we take that sunset off. You know, I think Bozeman Health would survive, but rural eastern Montana, a lot of these rural communities, losing that Medicaid, they were already losing money, and it's going to, you know, do them in.
Yes, I would vote to continue it and remove the sunset clause. I think we could come up with some more creative funding solutions in the legislature.
Another question. Yes, sir.
So on the sheet that we were given, Montana was middle of the pack for
poverty. Stand up, will you, and speak real loudly, because I can't hear you.
So on the pack that we were given, Montana was middle of the pack for poverty, but I was looking at a report, and we're actually number one in the country for suicide rates. And I know, Tom, you mentioned that you were quite comfortable with putting more money into programs that would help people who were suffering from mental illness. And as we talked about, substance use plays into it a lot. So I guess for the board, what specific programs would you like to support to help people who are often left on the outliers of society?
Are you talking about mental health or across the board?
Let's say mental health specific.
Okay. I don't want to push your question. Okay. What kind of specific programs would you support to help with mental illness? Okay.
I'm a big proponent of something that Mike Salvani started in Gallatin County, and that's a treatment court. And we put more money in that. It's very successful. And again, it's preventative. We're not putting people in prison, in jail, because they're opiate addicted or because they have mental health issues that cause them to be in trouble with the law. I think court treatment facilities and a program is a good start.
Like I said early on, I worked as a parent liaison with the Thrive program. And so that's in place in the school districts where teachers who see these children and these families 5 days a week, 6-7 hours a day. I would do the parent liaison program. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has programs in the schools, which are survivor outreach program. And they have, it's called More Than Sad. And it also is Talk Saves Lives. Those are free programs that are in the school district. The problem they have right now is that people are not really attending those. They might be a little fearful, they might be apprehensive. And I also would work with the hospitals. We need to get some psych beds in Bozeman at the hospital, at least two, because right now they bring them in, like, you know, Chris said, to the hospital, and then they have to wait till they get a deputy sheriff who can come with another person and take them down to Warm Springs. So we need to work with the help center, and we need to also be aware of what goes on and just be knowledgeable about what services they have in Bozeman and Gallatin County.
Well, as we talked about before, I think prevention and screening are key. You know, and a lot of the schools, there have been suicides in Livingston a couple years ago, Butte a couple years before that. 15 years ago, Bozeman had a couple at Bozeman High. Bullying programs are huge in the schools in helping prevent that. But we have other populations as well as veterans, Native Americans, and we need more and more people that work with these people to have the training to be able to screen and look for the signs of, you know, suicide and other mental health issues.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot. Prevention and screening and our catching things early is obviously very important. But in order to set up the infrastructure that can equip our society and our state as a whole for that, we need mental health service centers. And what I mentioned earlier was having a hub and spoke system that could be having centers statewide, and those centers could also be the people that go out into the community, into the schools, into the veteran community, into the Native communities, and give training sessions for people on how to identify things like depression, suicide, warning signs. And then those people will be able to have ready access to a facility within a short drive of their house and a provider.
I looked up a little bit of data on suicide incidents. I'll just dig it up here. The rate of suicide is something like, it's close to 10 times as much as, it's 10 times for 25 to 75 plus as it is for 15 to 24. And this just shows the difficulty of curbing this plague and issue. So we do spend funds at the state level. There are many privately funded agencies, and there's a lot of work going into suicide prevention. And we don't know what's working, what's not working, and what are the best places to spend money.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll go again if nobody's.
Sure.
This last legislative session, there were some bills or some taxes that you guys could have voted on, like 2 cents on a glass of wine, or $50 on a financial license, which has been at like $50. Because there were these cuts in the state, when there could have been these just little minute increases, I'm getting there.
Okay.
A lot of people got put out of jobs. The case manager that deals with my granddaughter over here, they went from 25 to 30 employees to one. When are you guys going to start standing up for Montana and vote for some sensible things that will help all of us? Mental health centers have been closed. My question is, when are you guys going to grow a set and start voting for some taxes to help the people in this state?
I'm not going to speak for Chris, but I think she's going to say the same thing. That's exactly why we're up here, because we have hit the wall and we have had that frustration. So that's why I'm running. That's why we got off the sidelines, and that's exactly why I'm running.
Exactly. I'm 67 years old, so I'm not up here for a political career. I am not up here. I retired, and now I'm busier than when I retired. But exactly what Denise said is, this is our recourse. We have a voice, and believe me, I have a voice, and I intend to use it.
I asked Legislative Finance Division to provide a tabulation of the cuts that were issued, that we've heard so much about in the press, the bullet cuts that we solved in the second, the special session. These are the cuts in DPHHS and the restorations. Total cuts, $30.5 million. Total restorations, $30.5 million. I know not every area was equally distributed, those restorations. But no, I'm not voting for tax increases.
Vote you out.
Say, I'm sorry?
No.
We're all gonna be polite.
So, I'm open. I would have to see. I think one of the areas that, especially in this valley, that taxpayers are getting hit are property taxpayers. Every new school building, every new law and justice center or whatever in Bozeman, the property taxpayers pay for that. So I'm open to some other revenue means. What I mentioned before, a local option sales tax, which the legislature wouldn't pass. They'd just allow local communities to ask their voters to pass something that they could use for whatever they wanted. That's local control to me. It's just allowing local governments to do what's necessary for their communities. As far as a statewide tax, you know, possibly a statewide sales tax, but there would have to be, you know, reduction in property taxes or something else. But using our taxes wisely and having a more balanced tax system, you know, I would work on that.
Yeah, if the question was whether I would grow a pair and support that, consider me grown. I would never support the kind of came down in the last session, never. Those came down and they were put on the most vulnerable people in this state, and I would never stand for that in a million years. When it comes to taxes, you know, nobody likes paying them. But I think we can find places where it's not gonna really hurt the majority of people. You're not gonna like slam some income tax on middle class families. We don't have to do that. You know, small taxes on things like liquor sales, gambling. I think these are all areas that would be absolutely right for coming up with for revenues for health and human services, you know, and we'll have the tobacco tax, and I think that's going to pass, and hopefully it does pass. So I would support things like that wholeheartedly.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for taking my question. Brief comment. Mr. Burnett mentioned when talking about Representative Burnett, mentioned when addressing climate change that he might be become a vegetarian or eat less meat. Well, that could be a reality. Montana is really reliant on agriculture as a state, particularly livestock. The meat industry being a very intensive industry for resources, water, carbon emissions.
The question would
be, is that if we're all thinking about how does our state evolve, what would the policies that you will support or be looking to invest in order to protect Montana's industries, whether it's ag or energy or technology, to future-proof it as we move forward into it.
Everybody get the question? Say the question part of it in one sentence.
What are the policies that you would support and investigate in order to future-proof Montana's economy for the economy of tomorrow?
Okay. Everybody get that?
Take a stab at that one. Ask her back there. Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to say with 10 degrees of warming, there's no future-proofing that. That's hotter probably than the Earth has been in the past 500 million years, potentially, which is the extent of advanced life on this planet. So it would happen so quickly and be so devastating that, you know, it'd be kind of a moot point. So I think we have to rein in carbon emissions, and that's first and foremost the thing that we have to do if we want to future-proof. You know, if we can keep it to 2 degrees or under, we can manage things and survive. It's still going to be really, really hard. You know, we're going to have to get used to things like forest fires, and we're going to see that our vegetation zones are going to shift, and there's not going to really be anything we can do about that, you know, and we can talk about how we're going to manage our forests differently or anything, but it's going to be completely reactionary because it's just going to all happen within the course of 50 to 7,500 years. And we have to get a handle on carbon emissions, and I can't stress that strongly enough.
That's a tough question, but I don't have the answer legislatively, but what I would do, you know, I'm a strong supporter of ag. It's our biggest industry in the state. And I think supporting our university system and the research that can help agriculture, other technologies, you know, looking to the future, being able to do that research to help our jobs and industries in the state of Montana.
Yeah, this stuff is coming at us hot and fast, and I don't think we need to try to predict where it's going. Or we just need to be ready. We just need to stay out of the way, regulate as light as possible, while maintaining public safety, and allow the market to drive the technological changes that are coming in ag, forestry, mining, energy, the whole shooting match. Big days are coming, and we just don't want to mess it up.
I agree, education is the key to educate for a new world, basically. And I think that we need to depend on ourselves and not corporations. I think we can make decisions, and if we make poor decisions, at least you can elect us and vote us out. With a corporation, you can't. You have no control. And so whatever we do, we have to make sure that we have our hand in the pot and that we can say, this is what we need as a people, not as money makers. And that's to me, we're stakeholders. We're not shareholders. So any decision that we make has to be made by the stakeholders and not the shareholders.
That's a tough question,
Jacob.
Now, public lands, water, agriculture, talking to the farmers and to the ranchers to find out what their wants, needs, and wishes are. You know, we live in Montana because we love it here. It's beautiful here. We love the outdoors. Our family, our friends live here. And so it's our job to protect that and do as much as we can environmentally, as well as financially, working with the farmers, the ranchers. Also, you know, I used to recruit people to Bozeman, Montana State University, from the state of Montana, from the United States, and all over the world, actually. And the reason we would get these great student athletes to come here was because of the forest, and it's the ninth most visited forest in the country. And so we need to protect our water, our public lands, and our agriculture.
You're in tune to KGVM Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio at 95.9 FM on your dial or streaming on the web at kgvm.org. Now we'll listen to the rest of the candidate forum from Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018 at the Belgrade Public Library.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a two-part question. Would you be a proponent of transferring lands, federal lands, to state ownership?
Okay, let me just say that. Would you be in favor of transferring federal lands to state ownership?
Yeah. The state did get control of the federal lands. Would you be in favor of the state privatizing some of those lands?
Okay, and if the state did take over the fed lands, would you be in favor of privatizing?
I'll start.
I would not be in favor of transferring federal lands to the state. And so therefore I would not even be in favor of privatizing that.
Somebody asked, why not?
Well, number one, I don't think financially we can afford it. It's a very, very expensive to maintain federal lands. I mean, I don't think we could afford it as a state. We may be able to afford it for 1 or 2 years, and then we'd have to sell them all. And I just would not. So I guess it would be financially, as well as, you know, $7.1 billion, according to the USDA, was brought into the state because of tourism. And people come here for our public lands that we all can use. And I think everybody needs to have access to them in any shape and form that they like.
I agree. I want to keep public lands in public hands. As I said before, I grew up in Butte, Montana. And I know what mining does, not just mining, but the land for industry, there's places for that. But this land has been set aside, and we don't, as a state, need to sell off this land, because I'm pretty pretty sure that that would happen, because as Denise said, economically, it's not sustainable. And what do you do when you can't afford it and you have parcels of land? You sell it to the highest bidder. And I'm sure that's not going to be cabin area. It's going to be for some kind of extractive industry.
My first session in Helena, there was a bill that would have enabled the transfer. And it just seemed kind of hasty to me, and I voted no. In my most recent session, I voted yes on a bill that would have enabled that. So I'm on record, and can't escape that vote. Now, I'm not ashamed of that vote. State lands are more productive and better managed than federal lands. Check the PERC website and evaluate their research. So I would vote for transfer to state ownership. Now, all the political talking gets, so that's not a, would it, could it be sold for private use, is your second question. And I wouldn't say absolutely not. I wouldn't say absolutely not. Take this instance from the Nature Conservancy. They had a piece of land that was gifted to them in the bayous of Louisiana. This is a long time, I read this study long ago. Oil was discovered under that piece of land. They found that they could sell off 10% of that chunk, make 40 million a year, and protect another large expanse of land. They did it, the Nature Conservancy. So these things are not all that cut and dry. There are reasons for every, you know, for every choice.
No and no. One of the reasons when I moved to Montana in 82, I stayed here is because of public lands. I've been a longtime hunter, and I've seen what, if the state took it over, it was mentioned already, it would be hard for us financially to manage all that land, and the state would most likely have to sell off land to be able to take care of it and pay for it, and I already have a hard time finding a place to get elk that's on public land because they're mostly on private land, so no.
Yeah, the answers would be hell no and hell no. And you can talk about the financial reasons that that's not viable, but for me it's an underlying philosophical reason. I am an American and I am a free person, and my ancestors were able to walk from one horizon to the other as free people, and I can, and I fully intend that my children and grandchildren will be able to do the same.
Okay, more questions. These are great questions, by the way.
Tourism is a big growing industry in Montana. Like, I know I'm not from Montana initially, I moved here years ago, but how do you intend, if elected or if you continue to be in office, to keep the dollars that tourists spend in Montana and helping our communities?
How do you
intend to keep dollars that outside of the tourists spend in Montana?
Oh, how are you going to keep the tourist dollars from into
here,
Montana,
here,
in Montana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think I mentioned once before, I'm in favor of the state allowing local communities, whether it be incorporated cities, towns, or counties, to ask their voters if they would like to levy a local option sales tax. And those would be targeted toward restaurants, bars, not grocery stores, not, you know, where you buy your everyday needs. But and that allows local governments, for instance, the Gallon Valley has more tourism dollars than any other county in the state. It would allow us to capture some of that money to take care of our roads that those tourists are using and build the infrastructure that they're looking when they visit here. So I'm in favor of local control, allowing local governments to go to their voters and ask their voters to tax tourists.
Yeah, I would put the caveat on the local options type taxes that they should be geared maybe towards non-residents. For instance, if you have a Montana driver's license, you would be exempt. I've been thinking about how we could do something like that to cash in on the tourists, but I think that we should, if we do go that route, we need to make sure that it's not coming down on residents. So.
I think the dollars do stay with the businesses that provide the services. That's the direct answer to the question, but I'm not in favor of the local option sales tax. Bozeman could collect a fortune in local option sales tax. Townsend, Winnet, Baker, not so much. So you're setting up a big fight about redistributing from the tourist areas to the non-tourist areas.
Again, local option taxes, as a city council person, I know what it takes to build the infrastructure and maintain the infrastructure that these tourists exact on a community. And there's also the eastern Montana towns, hunting season is great. I was talking to someone from the High Line and said they have tourist tax dollars as well. Pheasant hunting is a great thing in the far eastern Montana. So it's not as grand scale as Yellowstone or Glacier National Park, but that's why it's a local option tax. And as Seth said, you know, it's like the state parks. If you show your Montana ID, you don't pay the entrance fees. So we could work something out like that.
District 64 is unique in the fact that West Yellowstone has a resort tax. Big Sky also has a resort tax. And most of the people have to land in Gallatin County to get up to those places. So it's helped with Big Sky. It's helped with West Yellowstone. Most of the bed tax and the resort tax, bed tax that we pay or tourists pay when they come to Montana, goes to the tourist office in Helena so they can make signs to put in Hong Kong or the Chicago airport, come to West Yellowstone, come to Yellowstone National Park. If there was a way, and I don't know that, if there was a way to get some of that money to come back locally into Gallatin County, that would be great. And I know, you know, there's someone in this room has also thought about a statewide resort tax. That might be more feasible for other communities like Great Falls, for example, because people have to go to Glacier Park. So there may be some way to capitalize on having some of those dollars stay in Gallatin County, for sure. It's a great idea.
I was hoping that each of the candidates could tell us of a time that they showed leadership.
You want each person to speak about a time when they showed leadership?
Yes.
Excellent question. Well, I've been a competitor my whole life, and I started when I was 5. I'm not going to tell you how old I am now, but it's a long time. And I played team sports. I played at the University of Utah on the women's tennis team. And playing with 6 to 8 other women, you have to step up into that leadership role and understand to listen to everybody and hear everybody's concerns. And I think being a leader is also being able to collaborate with others and realizing that you're no better than anybody else, and that's a sign of a good leader. And also when I was coaching at Montana State University for 15 years in the coaching world, we would get players from all over the world, all over the country, all over the state that were all the best player from where they came from. I had Ellie Crump from Great Falls High. She was the best player. So I had 8 best players all at one time. And trying to understand and teach them how to be a leader, you know, it's not something that you do. It's a very subtle move, and it's just working with others and understanding and collaborating.
I have two distinctly different. One, showing leadership was probably one of the hardest things in my whole life. It was right after Columbine, and I was teaching in my 6th grade class, and we had a bomb threat. And deciding whether I needed to keep my kids in the school, or was it a ploy, or take them outside, that was probably the most difficult decision I've ever had to make as a leader. Is 11 and 12 years old. Am I leading them into their death? And truly, at that time, if you remember, am I leading out there to be shot, or are we staying here where there's a bomb? Luckily, it was neither. But it was life-changing for all the educators. It's a different world. Leadership that's great for me, I'm on the city council. We're nonpartisan, and we come from every political spectrum you can believe. And we're leading this city into, I call it the new tomorrow, because we're no longer below grade, we're not below grade. We're our own community, and helping it grow and grow the correct way. So everybody has a piece of the pie, and everybody's comfortable, and it's a community. And that's my proudest moment, is to continue that and to see young people, average age here is 32, be involved in the community and love it as much as I do. And to me, that's, it's such a small thing to some people, but to me, it's the world.
Like most of you, I'm a parent. That's my biggest test. I think I've shown leadership in church, helping people succeed. And I'll mention one test of courage in the legislature, voting against the interest of people whose funding they thought put me in the legislature.
Well, I've been in a lot of leadership positions in my life, but I thought I'd talk about my freshman term as a legislator when the city of Belgrade and the Belgrade Chamber of Commerce came to me and asked me, said we need to do something about the liquor laws because all of our restaurants are closing in Belgrade and everyone's selling their liquor licenses to Bozeman restaurants for $1 million. And so I naively worked with them on a bill, and when it came up for a hearing, there was a line all the way down the hall of all the tavern owners coming to oppose my bill. So I learned a very quick lesson, but I didn't give up. After that bill went down, I talked to the lobbyists for the tavern owners. I talked to the Belgrade Chamber some more, some of the people that came and testified, and went back again with another idea. And the tavern owners gave me the idea, and I said, okay, I'll take this, and so they opposed me a second time. And I talked to them again. I said, we gotta get this done. So I worked with them after the session, and we brought it back to the special session attached to the auction bill and got it passed and divided the quota areas. And so now Belgrade can have some nice restaurants, hopefully where you can have a beer or a drink without gambling machines, so.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Before I worked in Montana, came to Montana, I worked for the Boy Scouts at their big ranch and high adventure base in New Mexico. And this was a place where, starting from a rather young age, most of the staff starts at between 18 and 21, and then by the time you're 25 to 30, you kind of end up in their upper echelons of leadership, and this is leading a staff of upwards of 1,000 summer seasonal staff. And when I was there, I was in the conservation department, and one of the big problems we faced was noxious weeds. And nobody really in New Mexico had a handle on this situation at all. It hadn't really blown up to the proportion it has in Montana yet. And so, but it was getting there. And so a group of us sat down and we came up with a plan and we talked our bosses into it. And then we went and we got a big grant from the Forest Service and we went and talked to all the other landowners in the county. And we put together a control program for the county that's still in place to this day. It's been almost 10 years now. So it was a team effort for sure, but we were really proud of that.
Okay, unless somebody has a burning question, I'm gonna give 2 minutes to each candidate to tell you why you want to vote for them, okay?
I'll go first.
Okay. When I used to do family therapy, and we'd have two parents come in, and usually it could have been an adolescent, anywhere from like 11 to 13, come into family therapy. My only rule at the beginning was they need to give me 150%. Otherwise, it's a waste of their time and my time. And also with my tennis players, when we're practicing, I don't care if they win or if they lose, but they need to give me 150%. So when I jumped in this race in January, that's what I told myself. I'm gonna give 150% and go every day. And so we started knocking doors In February, I knocked with one of my former players in Big Sky in West Yellowstone in February. People thought I was crazy. And so did I at first. And I said, you know, but if I want to hit as many doors as I can and work for you, that's what I'm going to do. And I put myself in going to meetings and where there's the water sewer district meetings, some of the school board meetings. That's our job. And if I get elected, I will continue to knock on your door. I'll continue to go to the water sewer district meetings. I'll continue to go to the community suppers. I mean, that's just what I do. And so it's been a great experience. And for those of you who've never run for office, I would encourage you at some point, if you have the opportunity, to do it, because it's a great experience. And the people that I've met have been awesome. So thank you all for being here.
Our residents of Belgrade in the outlying area have helped the city grow by passing levies where the library has been benefited twice, a permanent levy to help finance a library, police, fire. They're great at passing levies, school levies, but lately enough is enough. Our values aren't being, and what we think is important is not being shared by the state legislature. And what we need is a partner. We can't afford by ourselves a $24 million sewage plant or to expand our sewage system. If you live in Belgrade, you just got your notice that your water and sewer rates are going up. So because we're at capacity. And there's still a demand to live here. So when I looked to the legislature for infrastructure bills, or when I went into my former school and the roof is still leaking, Scott, or with streets and sidewalks, we've done great things. We've managed to get Urban Renewal District downtown with a TIF district to rebuild downtown, to create a community, a walkable community, a community where families can not be afraid to walk down the street. And so I run to represent my constituents and value what they value. And I have to give up a lot to be elected to the legislature. I have to give up my seats. Oh my God. You are more intimidating than seats. But I think it's worth it because the people here are worth it.
I'd like to dispel one image that we sometimes get in the press. When we are in the legislature, our opinions vary dramatically, and we vote against each other. But 99 people out of 100 are friends, and we worry about each other and our families, and we pray for them, and we rally behind them regardless of the party. I just wanted to throw that out. That's something that we don't sometimes perceive in the media. I'm a fiscal conservative. I think government has many valuable functions that must be properly funded. But I don't want to see tax increases. I think we have enough money coming out of your paychecks. We've heard a lot about things that could be funded tonight. I'm the Lone Ranger, Britton Aaron. And if we funded everything that sounded good or was necessary, that needs to present themselves, it would be a lot of money. And it would come from the middle class, because we don't have enough rich people to carry that well. So I'd appreciate your vote in November.
Well, I went through my freshman term, and I've learned a lot. And coming back for a second term, I think I can be a lot more effective legislator. I don't have to learn where the bathrooms are or anything like that. I know who to talk to. I can save time. But I originally went to the legislature as, you know, it came from being on the Bozeman School Board and being up there lobbying all the time for funding for schools. And I agree with Tom. I'm fiscally conservative. I don't want to spend too much money. But it's how we prioritize how that money's spent that's important. And I went up there with the idea, I represent my constituents, the Gallatin Valley. I don't represent my party. My conscience and my constituents. I go up there to solve problems that impact everyone's lives in the communities of the Gallatin Valley. And I'll work with whoever to try to get that done. There were some votes where I was the lone Republican voting for or against something in the House. And I'm not afraid to take a hard vote. So I'll work for you and the people of the Gallatin Valley. I'll work with whoever I need to solve problems. And hopefully I had 3 bills passed my freshman term, which I think was pretty good. And hopefully I'll get some things done next time. So I hope to get your vote.
You've worked really hard at this campaign, probably knocked on almost 2,000 doors at this point, used up a lot of paper, held town halls, and really tried to get a handle on what issues matter to the people in my district. And I want to fight for those people, and I want to work for people that work for a living and that are hard-pressed and have a hard time making ends meet. And I want to work for them, and I want to work for small businesses, the contractors, the electricians, the plumbers. And I want to work for our public lands and our right to access them. And if you also want somebody that's going to work for these issues, I would ask that you vote for me, please.
Okay. Thank you all so much for coming out. I want to make a special thank you to the candidates. It's a lot of work and a lot of effort.